Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. Thank you for joining me. It's great to have you on What Women Must Know. And as you probably know, if you've been listening for a while, this show is dedicated to empower you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. I want to welcome anyone who may be listening for the very first time, and I invite you to go to my website, which is What Women Must Know, and also go over to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know as well, where I not only post these shows on a regular basis, so if you miss them live, you can listen to them at your convenience whenever you so choose through either my Facebook page or if you opt in to my website, I send them out every week along with special reports and other ongoing research. So it's a great way to just gather your resources so you stay ahead of the curve of what's going on. And I have planned a really interesting show today, and I just want to share with you a study that kind of sets in motion the topic that we're going to be talking about today. A 2005 study by psychologist Martin Seligman, published in the journal American Psychologist, showed that a one-time act of thoughtful gratitude produced an immediate 10% increase in happiness and 35% reduction in depressive symptoms. But the effects disappeared within 6 months and 3 months, respectively. But doing it for a week was much more impactful. Participants asked to write down three things that went well and their causes every night for 7 days had an effect and lasted 4 months. After 1 week, participants were 2% happier than before, but in follow-up tests, their happiness kept on increasing from 5% at 1 month to 9% at 6 months. All this, even though they were only instructed to journal for 1 week. Participants enjoyed the exercise so much that they just kept on doing it on their own. So gratitude. So have you been aware of being grateful? Do you keep a gratitude journal? Do you notice the times throughout the day that you are expressing gratitude? Well, you probably will be after our conversation today, because today we're going to be talking about the transformative power of giving thanks, and my guest is Diana Butler-Bass. And just a little bit about Diana before we get into our conversation. Diana is the author of 10 books on American religion, politics, and culture, and comments weekly in the media about faith and public life. Her last book, Grounded, Finding God in the World, A Spiritual Revolution, was a best-selling book. She's won many awards for that book, and she holds a PhD in religious studies from Duke University and has taught at the college and graduate level, and is currently an independent scholar and teacher, and preaches internationally on matters of religion and spirituality. And her latest book is called Grateful, The Transformative Power of Giving Thanks. And I'm very grateful to have Diana on the show today. Hello, Diana.
Hi, it's good to be with you, Cheryl.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. And I recently got an email that had that study, which you probably are aware of. And I just thought it was really fascinating. So this whole theme of gratitude has been in my awareness this week, and I thought this is a perfect time to have you on the show and talking about gratitude and the power of gratitude and having a perception where we look for and acknowledge things we're grateful for in our lives. So I guess the place to start, Diana, is what was it that made you focus on this theme for your new book?
Well, that's actually a really good question. And as you were talking about that study, I was kind of laughing to myself because I'm not a psychologist or a therapist, and I'm not trained in neuroscience, none of the fields that are associated with people who generally write about gratitude. Instead, as you pointed out to your listeners, I write about religion and spirituality, mostly about trends, and primarily write about Christianity. So it's like, why is this woman, you know, writing a book on gratitude? And it was really personal for me. In 2015, my last book had been published, the one called Grounded, and I was beginning to think about what I wanted to do next. And so here I was in my late 50s, and I was taking stock of the books I'd written, of the direction I felt like I was being called as a writer. And one of the things that just sort of came to my attention while I was in that process was the fact that a couple friends of mine who were a decade or more older than me had recently passed away. And they were very different people, yet as I thought about their lives and how they had influenced me, both of them had been people I would describe as very grateful. They were people who really had this deep and amazing appreciation for all the gifts of their lives, even when things were hard. And I thought, that's amazing. And then this question began to grow in my own mind. Will people think that about me when I pass away? And I thought, I'm not sure. I don't think that the words gratitude or being a grateful person and who I am would come to the minds of people who knew me. And that really worried me. And I began to think, oh my gosh, you know, who do I really want to be for the next 20, 25, 30 years, however much time I have left? And I wanted very much to work on gratitude as a spiritual practice. So it came from a very, very personal place of considering the gifts that these mentors had given me and reflecting pretty deeply in, you know, kind of an interesting place in midlife about who I wanted to be going forward. And I don't know if that's normal or if that's strange or what it is, but, you know, we take stock once in a while. And when we do, it gives us a chance to change things. And so that began this journey of writing a book on gratitude and the book making a big difference to who I am.
So many spiritual traditions talk about the power of gratitude to transform and heal. So why don't we first define, at least, what do you define gratitude to be?
I didn't really know what it was when I started. You know, my main perception was that it was that gratitude involved having fights with my late mother over writing thank you notes. You know, that was about the depth of my understanding of what gratitude was. And so really my journey started with that question, what is gratitude? And as I began to read and let the wisdom of other people wash over me, I realized that gratitude was two things. It's a feeling and it's also an action. So it's something that's the aha and the moment of wonder and awe and surprise that we call gratitude. And it's also something we do. And that those feelings and those actions arise from being given a gift. So when we perceive that something has been given to us that was a present, something we did not expect, something that is meaningful to us, then we have these responses. And those responses happen on an individual level and also on a communal level. And so that's my very simple definition of gratitude, is that gratitude is an emotional and an ethical response to a gift. It's a pretty easy sentence, and it's a really hard thing to come to terms with in life.
Because when we talk about a gift, it's not necessarily a physical present that someone is being given. A gift can be defined as many things, you know, and,
yes.
And I guess, you know, that's where the more we can see life as these gifts, these precious gifts that are given to us, and not just when we're in a crisis, not just when there is some, you know, unexpected present delivered, not when we are dealing with some unexpected situation that we are given help to. I mean, but it's a way of seeing the world. And I remember in some of the books I've been reading about our brain, how our brain is wired. And our brain is actually wired to be negative because it has allowed us to be, you know, discerning and cautious as we evolved through life. Be aware of dangers, be aware of situations that are dangerous, you know, animals that are dangerous, other tribes that are dangerous. So it's become a really useful strategy and programming. However, it has its downside to be operating out of fear and negativity, and you know, that cautious mindset and the mindset that just makes us see the glass half empty all the time. And learning to program the mind in a new way actually is an intentional act. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, you know, I read both the negativity bias studies, which I think are really interesting about history, and you went right to the heart of them, and that is human beings over, you know, huge millennia of time have been programmed to remember negative experiences. So, you know, even today, you know, you're a little kid and you put your hand on the stove, you remember that the stove is hot and you don't ever do that again. And, you know, where did we get that kind of programming? Back when people sat around fires and little babies would crawl up and, you know, put their hand near the fire. It's like, you know, stay away from the fire. And that's how we survived. And that's how we got to be where we are in this evolutionary process. What's fascinating, I think, right now is that negativity doesn't really work in the state of play where the planet is right now. So if we're functioning out of remembering negative experiences that create tribalism and fear of the other and just this hyper sense of anxiety where we're always on alert looking for whatever is going to attack us, our ancestors weren't dealing with 24/7 cable news and a global economy and threats of war that come from all over the planet. And so if we actually continue to live within that preference for negative feelings right now, what we're discovering is that high levels of negativity are actually toxic for us. And there's a real need in that, as you were saying, to sort of reprogram the emotional complexity of being human at this moment in history. And the opposite, if negativity saved us when we lived in small tribes and were threatened by saber-toothed tigers, negativity right now is functioning to drive us apart and make decisions in a global ecology that are not really life-giving. And so we've got to find that different space. We have to find a way to lift up what is joyful, what is beautiful, what is good, what is positive. We need to really learn how to trust one another. And if we're going to survive on this planet now. And so the shift of the historical moment, the very size of the human race and all of these things are calling us to a different place in terms of our emotions. And so a lot of researchers in psychology, of course, are working on this very issue, you know, is how in the world do you find the capacity for people to get to positive emotions and that which will allow us to live in healthy and connected ways. And so gratitude is one of those tools that people are now figuring out can help us overcome fear and move towards a different kind of personhood.
So
very exciting, actually.
Because it's a learned behavior. We can learn it. We can incorporate it. We can rewire our brain so we can perceive the world from the, you know, the eyes of gratitude. But it's an action and a behavior that we must intentionally, for most of us, intentionally focus on and intentionally practice. So the question that kind of continues from this conversation is what are the benefits? what are the physical benefits? What are the health benefits when we choose to perceive our world and our daily life through the eyes of gratitude? And we can start looking for things that we're grateful for, which is, as we're saying, it's a discipline, it's a practice. But what's the payoff for doing that, Diana?
Well, everybody says, including the study that you quoted at the beginning, is that if we're grateful, that we are less anxious, we are less depressed, we have better health outcomes, we experience less negative forms of stress, and that we're more socially connected. So, you know, when I was reading all this stuff, I actually felt like, oh my gosh, gratitude is almost miraculous in what it can do for us. And then I thought, oh no, and I'm still bad at it. You know? So it was interesting because I'm reading all these amazing benefits from gratitude, and I'm trying to write a book about gratitude, but I still wasn't feeling it. And the journey of writing this book actually became part of the narrative. And as I was mentioning a few minutes ago, I started thinking about the book in late 2015, which meant I was writing the book or trying to write the book during 2016. The original due date was, my publisher was have it in April 1st, 2017. So here I am reading all of this research, exploring, you know, my own practices of gratitude, trying to, you know, put together the narrative, thinking about experiences that I'd had in the past about gratefulness. And all of this stuff was happening on the news. And, you know, every time I turn on the television, there were frightening, horrible stories. There was a political campaign that was, you know, over the top in terms of, you know, violent language, people yelling at one another, the name calling, the actual violence at campaign rallies. I mean, just so much. And I got to one point during the summer of 2016, and I turned around and I said to my husband, you know, I can't write this book because I just don't feel grateful. I said, I love what I'm reading. I love what I'm learning. It's really important. But right now, my feelings and what I'm working on are not in the same place. And as a writer, that's a very difficult moment, at least for me. I can never write about things that I don't really feel. So I said to my husband, I'm just going to continue doing what research I can, and I'm going to lay all this work aside, and I promise I will pick up the book again on November 9th, 2016, the day after the election, when everything goes back to normal. And it just got worse. You know,
I was going to say
nothing went back to normal, and I was like going, "Oh my gosh!" Now I have a deadline that's really it's looming, and I feel even worse than I did earlier on. And I finally got to a point right at the beginning of 2017 when I just rallied, and I said, "Okay, I have a commitment. I have to do this. Now, what am I going to do?" And I woke up on one morning, it's probably the third week of January, and I looked at myself in the mirror. Diana, what are you grateful for today? And I thought, well, you know, please, any listeners who didn't feel grateful with this, they'll have to excuse me, but I looked in the mirror and I literally said to myself, I'm grateful that Barack Obama is president for 3 more days. And and then I said, okay, that's one thing I can be grateful for. And I went into my office and I started to work. And that became my life until April of 2017, is that I would wake up every morning and say one thing I was thankful for, in the midst of all of that onslaught of news that we got in the first few months of Donald Trump being president of the United States, I was writing this book on gratitude. And my publisher would laugh. I mean, literally, it became a joke at the publishing house that they had the only progressive woman writer probably in the whole world who was doing a book on gratitude at this particular moment. And what I learned from that was absolutely astonishing. And that is, when you can give thanks for one thing, eventually you can give thanks for two things, and then three, and then four, and then everything begins to change. And what happened as I went through the process of writing is that I began to see myself get stronger. So there was a resiliency building into my emotional core, just like everybody says and all the books say. But there was also something else that was happening, and that was I began to feel much more empowered in terms of participating in the political realm, in terms of engaging in causes of justice that I care about. And so I actually discovered that gratitude was making me resilient, but it was also helping me to resist injustice. It was helping me to resist what I felt were false narratives about the time in which we are living. It gave me a capacity to be very strong in my public life. And so so I got to the end of writing the first draft, and I sent the first draft in on April 29th, 2017. And I came into the house, and I told my husband I'd sent it away. We were sitting down at dinner. We flipped on the news, and the news was that night that it was the 100th day of Donald Trump being president of the United States. And my husband looks at me, he said, "You just spent the first 100 days of Donald Trump writing a book about gratitude." And then he said, "I think it saved you."
Well, I'm sure it did. You know, the gratitude is a spiritual practice for me. It's a spiritual mm-hmm. practice. And by that I mean by focusing on things that I am grateful for in my life, it supports my body, it supports my health, it lets all my energy systems work in balance, which is pretty important in my world. But it also makes me, I would say, invulnerable to what's going on outside me. I mean, at this point in time, I don't listen to the news because I don't like what I hear, no matter what side is reporting it, to be honest.
Right.
And I find it distressful. I find it actually grates on my nerves. I just, you know, and I know a lot of things, so it doesn't matter what the news is. I disagree with what's being said because I don't think they're giving the whole story anyway. But I don't want the outside world to disturb my connection to my spiritual self, my connection to a place of gratitude, because it's such an illusion. We just can't get caught up in what's happening. And the illusion, by illusion, I mean it's transitory. All these things that are going on, you know, change from moment to moment, election to election, where the process is going on whether we like it or not. But what we can do is make the choices and learn the disciplines and the strategies that keep us sane in an insane world, which has always been an insane world. And it's up to us to find our way into inner peace. It's not going to happen out here.
And that's actually one of the things that I clearly was able to experience, is that the journey towards gratitude was very stabilizing, and it provided a sense of balance and completeness and real groundedness in my life, so that peace really emerged from those kinds of things. And I think that sometimes we use the word like peace, and it sounds very mystical, which of course it is, but it's also a capacity of those things I was just talking about, stability, balance, groundedness, that is being deeply, deeply internally connected, you know, not just blown by every wind that comes by. And so I was able to experience that at a very profound level. And the other piece of it for me, because I write in the media, you know, and I'm always speaking in churches and other, you know, very public places, is that I really do actually have to pay attention to the news. Not that I, you know, believe every single thing I hear on the news, but I have to pay attention to what's going on to the world. But what I discovered was is that the inner capacity of gratitude gave me an outer capacity of discernment, of being able to say, okay, this seems important, this seems less important, this seems like a distraction, this really matters. And, you know, even today while I'm listening to the news or trying to follow, you know, current events, there are certain kinds of things that I pay more attention to, and they aren't just the surface things. They aren't just whatever the headline happens to be of the day, whatever the latest tweet is or the latest, you know, sort of attack that the Mueller is investigating on the president, or, you know, again, those things we can move past the immediate level and say, well, what really matters here? And there are some things, obviously, you know, and you follow these things, I'm sure, if wherever you look for them, that are really important. And those are issues around, you know, racism and emergent nationalism across the Western world, and how that has an impact on people of color, and what does that mean, you know, for the kinds of neighborhoods and communities we form, and you know, how people are actually in a lot of those communities living in fear right now. And so, you know, what is the responsibility of a person who has a sense of well-being and inner peace toward our neighbors in a moment of deep kinds of communal distress? So those are the ways that I'm trying to connect that inner reality, that inner peace, with a life of compassion that is lived towards the world in honor of my neighbor, which all of that seems to be a part of these great religious and spiritual traditions, that we're called to be both people of peace inwardly and people who create peace in the outer arena of our lives. And so gratitude functions in both of those arenas. And so that's one of the things I try to introduce my readers to in the book, how that might work. What does it mean to have a life that's full of resilience and peace? And what does it mean to set a table of thanksgiving in the world so that our neighbors are all fed and have a place to sit?
Well, I loved what you said. I think that's, you know, inspiring. How do you incorporate that? And I want to just take it from there and talk about how we can move ourselves into a consciousness of gratitude. And I think it's really hard. It's a challenge, not impossible, but it's a challenge when you are going at a million miles an hour. So when people mm-hmm. are really busy and create all these distractions and are on the go, which is so much a part of our culture, it's very difficult, not impossible, but it's difficult to stop and take a moment and look with the eyes of gratitude. So for me, and in the teachings that I do with people, I remind them it's important to slow down. You have to slow
yeah.
down, because then you notice the things you're grateful for. And whether that's slowing down by taking a walk in the park, or whether it's slowing down by doing a meditation, or whether it's slowing down by just having a silent meal, I mean, it takes effort to slow down in our culture. It's not an easy thing. You know, it's so easy to be on the go and distracted. But only when we can kind of take a breath and slow down and put our attention on the world around us in that moment can we see the things that we are grateful for and can acknowledge them.
I actually had a great thing happen to me this morning. This is not in the book, but it's the kind of story that if I was writing the book now, would have probably wound up in it, is that I was actually feeling that this morning. I was feeling very overwhelmed about a number of things, and I was talking to a friend in complete frustration, and I finally said to my friend, look, I'm just not even going to talk about this anymore. I'm going to go for a walk. And so I happen to live in Northern Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C. And my house is about a mile and a half away from the Potomac River. So I got in my car and I drove down to this place where there's a beautiful long pathway that goes on for miles along the Potomac River. So I pull up the car this morning. It's an absolutely beautiful day here in Washington, D.C. And I look out on the river, and the river is sparkling. It's like diamonds floating on the water. And so I was so excited. I actually run out of the car down to the riverbank, and I think, oh, thank you. And I open my eyes and I look, and the reason the river is sparkling is we just had all of this rain, and the river is kind of right below a flooding stage. It's very, very high. So I look at the river after I've just given thanks for it, and the sparkling is happening because there were thousands of plastic bottles floating on the currents of the river. And so the sparkling was from the garbage. The sun was bouncing off of these plastic bottles. And I looked at that and I went, oh my gosh, I felt horrible. I was angry. I felt really depressed. And I thought, you know, here I was in this mood to give thanks, and I, you know, taking this time and wanting this walk to really, you know, make me feel the power of gratitude, and I open my eyes and there's garbage floating on the river. So I just kept walking, and I was meditating about the garbage, and I was actually thinking, okay, let's just, I wonder if there's a way that my soul can match the flow of this river right now. And so I was trying to let the garbage, I was envisioning the garbage not being there and the river just flowing. And as I was walking and I was trying to get my sense into the flow of the river, I noticed that right up ahead of me, there was a person who had gotten off a bicycle. I could see where the bike was parked. And this person was kneeling right at the edge of a little pedestrian bridge that goes over a small inlet from the river. And I thought, oh my gosh, I wonder if that person's praying. So I kept walking up the pathway, and I didn't want to bother the person. And I noticed by this point it was a woman. And so I was just planning to keep walking, you know, and let her do whatever she was doing. Well, as I was stepping over the bridge, I kind of glanced backwards, and I saw that she wasn't praying, but instead she was kneeling right at the edge of the water, and her hands were in the muck and the mud, and she was pulling something out of the mud. And I thought, oh, wonder if she's found, like, you know, a turtle or some frogs or, you know, something, because there's a lot of interesting wildlife down there. And so I stopped and I leaned over the bridge and I said, oh, what are you looking for? Is there like a turtle down there? And she looks up at me and she held her hand up, and in her hand there were straws. And I said, oh, you're picking up garbage. And she said, yes. She said, there's a lot of small plastic and these straws. And she said, and the small plastic is just the worst. She said, somebody's got to get down on their knees and pick up the little pieces. And only when we pick up the little things will everything change. And I literally...
That's a good lesson. Well, you're grateful for a good lesson, huh?
I know. I literally looked at her. I think my mouth must have fallen open. And I just said to her, I said, thank you. And I went and I kept walking. And I literally, at that moment, everything changed. Was that here was this woman who was able to see past the thousands of bottles. I had gotten caught up on the thousands of bottles floating on the river and feeling like that was completely out of my control and that I was so angry about the trash. And yet here was this one woman, and she had just the smallest little garbage bag, and she's kneeling by the edge of the river, and she's picking up the littlest pieces of plastic with such hopefulness that that's the thing that will make all the difference. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's what we all have to do all the time, is that if we pick up just the small things that are right around us, everything can change. And literally my walk went from sort of my expectation of what thankfulness should look like to anger, and then to paying attention to what was around me, and it became about thanksgiving. And finally, then motivation. And I was so ever since, you know, this happened on my walk this morning, I've just been walking around thinking, oh, what are my small things? What are the small things I can pick up? And, you know, will someone in the universe say thank you? And even if nobody says thank you to me, you know, she just literally, she would have done that whether I said thank you or not. But she was really happy that I said thank you to her. And she said, when I did say thank you, she said, she looked and she smiled and she said, it's my pleasure.
So that's such a wonderful story, because it teaches all of us that when you shift a perception, everything changes. Everything changes. Mm-hmm. Everything changes in your body. Everything changes in how you relate to the world. And, you know, you went from feeling angry and hopeless and helpless and resentful and, you know, all those emotions, which do nothing for you. They are not beneficial in any way. You know, as a naturopath, I just can't help but go back to how those emotions impact our health. And
right.
How they shut us down and how they cause all these stress hormones to be released and they alter the entire physiology, right? But then that journey, and with that intention you had, obviously you had an intention to find gratitude, so you did. It just didn't happen in the way you thought it was going to happen with your picture of it. But in the end, that was the gift you gave yourself, you know, and to continually remind yourself how to change your focus, how to change your awareness to see the world through eyes of gratitude, no matter what's going on, no matter how it looks. How do you find the small little things?
And I think that's really completely the beauty of that story, and it is actually the beauty of gratitude, is that, and it was what I learned on the 100 days journey of writing the book, too, is I started out by saying something I was thankful for that was right in front of me, that was immediate, and, you know, in the scope of things, it wasn't probably a very good thank you to say, you know, thank you that Barack Obama is president for 3 more days. But when we just even enter into that, it expands and it becomes something we don't expect. And so through the journey of writing the book, I learned to pay attention, and I learned to look for gratitude. But it doesn't mean that it always shows up in the ways that I expect it to. But I was open to it wherever it came. And, boy, that was a beautiful thing this morning, because it really did. I went down there feeling a sense of stress and depression, and I thought that the river would immediately overcome it. I was looking for my miracle, as it were, and basically what I saw was garbage on the river. But the miracle was waiting for me. It was right there. I just had to walk a little further and keep my eyes open. And so today I literally went through that journey that you just described, of stress, and I could feel the negativity building up even when I was walking, and then all of a sudden the whole picture changed.
Yeah, you know, it's wonderful. It seems like this book has been has come into your life as an opportunity for you to continually expand and transform yourself as well as passing on that gift through your book. You know, it's wonderful how we teach best what we most need to learn, and, you know, the many ways that that happens in our lives, because obviously it was a great gift you gave yourself through this journey of gratitude and gratefulness.
Yeah, and it is that way for, I think, all teachers. You know, you're standing in front of a classroom sometimes lecturing, and you're going, uh-oh, my main student here is me.
Absolutely,
and then,
absolutely.
And then you're taking, you know, the other people in the community with you on that journey, and it's really exciting. And I think that, you know, part of the experience that I did have is that, you know, we're never done with those journeys, that we start where we are. And it doesn't matter if you're 15 or 30 or 42 or 57, is that this can become part of your story. This can become the way you look at the world. And that's a beautiful thing. Spiritual practices wait for us to show up.
And, you know, the being grateful for three more days of Barack Obama, it wasn't so much the specifics, wasn't so much that it was 3 days about Barack Obama. It was the fact that you found something to be grateful for, and that shifted everything inside you. So, you know, that's always the important thing. Find whatever is going to allow you to enter that state of gratitude. And for some people, you know, in bad days, they may just be grateful that they, you know, they have eyesight, you know, that their eyes are working, that they can see, or that they have balance, or that they can, you know, move a finger. It comes back to very small things that if you don't have, you know, you really miss. And so it brings us back to being grateful for all the things that are working in our life that make our life valuable and pleasurable and meaningful. And it's a training. So let's move into some of the strategies that you recommend, Diana, how to train people to see through the eyes of gratitude, to have a grateful perception of reality. It is a discipline, and it does take practice, I believe, for most people. I mean, I guess there are some people that are born optimists, but for most of us, it's a training. So what do you recommend in giving people a strategy to help them practice gratitude?
Yeah, one of the things that I was very helped by was reading the book by Charles Duhigg called The Power of Habit. And, you know, it's not a book about gratitude specifically, but it's a book about how we develop habits, and that we all are creatures of habit, that over time, you know, when we wake up in the morning, you smell a cup of coffee, that those will do, you will respond in certain ways to that cue, to the coffee brewing in the kitchen. And so what Duhigg says is that if you want to change habits, if you want to have healthier, more life-giving habits, you have to put cues, C-U-E-S, into your life that then remind you to do something. And eventually you'll just, like, get to the cue and the thing will become completely natural. So the idea of writing a gratitude journal, which the Sigmund study was about, that you started the interview with, was that people were asked to do something, and that is they were asked to list every night something or some things they were grateful for on a piece of paper. And so it wasn't that writing those things down becomes the, you know, sort of the cure-all, the magic pill. But instead, writing something down in the evening became the cue to recall the day with thankfulness. And so what I have learned in my own practice as it's grown over the years of now writing this book and now speaking about it, is that some cues work better for some people than other things do. There are people who, when they're prompted to write down three gratitudes each evening, some people will love that. They will be so good at it. That will be the thing that becomes their way of renewing their world. They'll be able to see the day differently by practicing that. But there are going to be different things for different people. And one of the writing down of things in a journal has worked for me on occasion. It did not work terribly well for me when I was doing this book. I tell a story in the book about a time it did work well for me when I was in my 30s and I had just lost a job. But I found a couple other strategies were really interesting. One was that my family created a group text on the phone. And so my daughter had just started at university, and my husband and I are empty nesters for the first time. And so each evening while I was working on the book, we would just text to the group chat, what were you grateful for today? And then the three of us would reply. And so we created this little evening conversation about things that had mattered to us during the day. And that became a way that we all experienced gratitude that we had never really thought about before. So that was one thing. Another thing that my husband and I did just this past year during Lent is that every night at dinner we read a poem. And we have this book of poetry that's mostly contemporary poems, and they're poems of presence and mindfulness. And as we read through them, we realized almost all of them are about gratitude. And so every night we would read a poem about mindfulness that would help us look at the world a different way. And then we would say what we were thankful for. So reading poetry, sending text, keeping a gratitude journal. My favorite thing, and I'm sitting right here while I'm talking to you, I'm actually in my bedroom, is I have a river rock. This is the thing that works the best for me at this point in my life. It's a white, smooth stone, and across it is the word gratitude. And that stone sits on my bedside table. And every morning when I wake up and I reach for my phone to turn off the alarm, sometimes my hand actually lands on the gratitude rock before it lands on the phone. And so gratitude is the first thing I actually feel every morning, and it's also the last word I see before I fall asleep at night. And so just having the rock with the word gratitude sitting on my bedside table reminds me in the morning to say thank you, and it reminds me in the evening to say thank you. So these kinds of things become cues. Gratitude journal, creating a gratitude group, which is essentially what my family did by text, but I know other people who do it in different ways. I actually have a friend who does it on Twitter with her friends. Or you can do it, of course, in private. Having a cue like a stone or a poster or something like that that's immediately within your sight upon rising or going to sleep. These are all ways to remind ourselves to look for the gift. And that's what the real point is that every day we need to understand that gifts are constantly coming at us from the universe, and that we are not left alone, and we don't live in a universe where scarcity is the main story. We live in a universe that's speaking to us about love, about compassion, about abundance, about care, and that we're not alone. And to begin to recognize when those things show up, to look for the gifts. That's really become where my attention can be focused. And when we see those gifts, it's like, oh, gosh, I'm so grateful.
And those are some great strategies. I love what you were saying. I haven't done this for a while, but after reading your book and having this conversation, I'm going to go back to what I have done in the past, which is to write a journal or to start the day with things I'm grateful for. And the strategy that I used, wherever I learned it from, was you cannot say the same thing twice, which is a really strategy, right? Well, that was a really good strategy because you can get into a behavior where you're just mindless you know, and just writing things down and you repeat it. But when you actually have to search for new things every day, and I think it was like 10 things that have to be, you know, the goal was to write 10 things you're grateful for, and every day they have to be 10 different things. That is an interesting strategy. That really makes you open and expand your perception of things. So I love doing that, and I think it has huge benefits. And even for people, and I think just important to mention, even when people are going through difficult times, I think you talked about times when you lost your job and you use gratitude, but people are dealing with serious illnesses or serious financial situations or whatever crisis a person may be going through in our lives, and everyone has those times of crisis. This is when gratitude really is important. This is when we have to take a moment. It could just be a brief moment, and we look around and we express something we are grateful for. It helps the energy within us to be resilient, as you were saying, so we can make it through those times of crisis as best as possible, and uplifts our spirits, keeps us going. So I just think it's really important for people to understand that this is not a strategy, an action, a behavior, a shift of consciousness that happens just when, you know, things are rolling along in your life. It's something that you want to embody within you so you have it during times of more challenging situations and call upon it.
Yeah. So often people do treat gratitude a little like a panacea. You know, it's like, oh, if you're just grateful for something, you know, all these good things will come your way. It's a little bit like a prosperity gospel kind of thing. You know, think enough good thoughts and you'll get rich. But it's really not that. And one of the passages that I talk about toward in the end of the book is a verse from the Christian New Testament that people love to quote about gratitude. If you have had any experience in a church, if you have any sort of Christian upbringing at all, you probably heard somebody quote it to you at some point in time, "In everything give thanks." And the way that I had heard that for years, sort of wrongly used, is that when something really bad was happening, someone in a church would look at you and say, "Well, you know, you're supposed to give thanks for everything. You know, something horrible. You know, the good will show here. Just give thanks for it." What's fascinating is it really, that's not what it says. What it says is much closer to what you just said, and that is that sentence in Greek, the first word, "in everything give thanks." That little word in Greek is en, E-N, and that means through in Greek. So the teaching within the Christian faith is actually through all things give thanks, not for all things give thanks. And that's where we really get messed up. And you got it just exactly 100% right. It's when you're going through things. You don't give thanks for the injustice. You don't give thanks for the lack of resources. You don't give thanks if you know somebody's done something terrible to you or you've lost your job. That you don't give thanks for bad circumstances, but instead, within the bad circumstances, you give thanks through that moment, and it can take you to another place. And one of my favorite stories that I read in all of the research was the interview between Oprah Winfrey and Elie Wiesel, where Oprah asked him, "What was the thing? What was the thing that enabled you to survive the Holocaust, the camps?" And he said, "Being grateful." And he talked about how that people who were in those camps that tended to survive were the people who could, even in the midst of all that horror, wake up in the morning and find one thing to hold on to and be thankful for. And he said usually it was just the fact that they'd woken up, just the fact that they were breathing one more day. And yet that capacity for gratitude was what got him through what is obviously the worst possible inhumane thing that people can be put through. And so when I read that interview, it just sort of, it stopped me in my tracks, and I remember crying reading the interview and feeling like, okay, you know, if someone like Elie Wiesel and the unnamed, you know, hundreds, maybe even thousands of people who survived the Holocaust in that way can manage to find gratitude through those days, I can certainly find gratitude through whatever is bedeviling me at any given moment. And that's what made him who he is or was. And it's very powerful.
That's such a beautiful, inspirational message that you've given us, you know, to complete our conversation. That was just, you know, very, very profound, Diana. So thank you for that. And because we have come to the end of our conversation, I want to encourage people to, first of all, go to Diana's website, which is dianabutlerbass.com, dianabutlerbass.com, and to pick up a copy of her book, Grateful, The Transformative Power of Giving Thanks, so you can find the inspiration in your life to look through the eyes of gratitude, as I like to say, and begin to embody the ability to give thanks for whatever's happening at any moment in life, because it is the ultimate healing, the healing gift you give to yourself. So, Diana, thank you so much for your commitment to stay in there and write this book no matter what, and to be with us today and share your very beautiful, powerful, healing message, so we can all really receive the gratitude to you and to share it out in the
world. Well, thank you for all the healing words you put in the world.
Well, you are very welcome. So, and thank you. I'm grateful to all of my listeners as well, being with me over the years. This is a good time to be gratitude. Hopefully, as people hear this interview, they will go out into their day giving gratitude and thanks in multitude of ways to the wonderful people and circumstances and life that they have. And Diana, again, thank you for being with us. And it's been a pleasure having this conversation with you. And again, people listening, please go and visit Diana Butler Bass's website and her book. And until next time, as I always like to say, please honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.